141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Please gamble responsibly.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Brendan Rodgers gives an update on Celtic's transfer window plans as Marvin Kompare faces a spell out injured and Liam Henderson heads for Italian side Bari. Martin Canning says Hamilton Accies aren't under pressure to sell Greg Docherty to Rangers and will only do so if the price is right. And in the second hour of tonight's show, it's time for a debate on the future of Hampden, a decision on the home of Scottish football is just around the corner, so we're going to hear from Hampden Chiefs, be joined by a player who knows it more than most in Andy Robertson, get Murrayfield's side of the story and get the political viewpoint as well. We look forward to that debate in the second hour, but in the meantime, I'm in the company of Mark Guidi and Alex Ray. How are we both?
Very well, thank you, Gordon.
Yep, good, Gordon.
Raring to go, I'm glad to hear it. Let's kick off with hearing from Brendan Rodgers, shall we? Because it's been a bit of a quieter transfer window so far for Celtic. The obvious answer to that would be they perhaps don't need to do too much squad rebuilding at the moment. But Brendan Rodgers says he will be making more January signings, but will not be rushed into panic buying. Rodgers says it's all about finding the right player at the right price. He won't be drawn on speculation, but he did confirm new signing Marvin Kompare will be out for a month with a calf injury, but says that will not change his January plans.
It's something that we'd look to do, but we stay calm. We have a month to do it. For us, it's all about trying to get the quality, not necessarily about numbers, and it's trying to get in the players that can really help make a difference for us. Been unfortunate, really, with injuries that we've had this year, where it's taken a lot of the creativity away from our squad, with the unavailability of players for a period of time. So that's something that we've obviously looked at, but we're calm. The recruitment department behind the scenes are working very hard in terms of identifying the right types of players that can make a difference for us, not just for now but going forward. We brought in a defender, we've got two centre-halves playing, we've got Marvin Kompare in, we've got Jozo, so we've got four centre-halves. So Eric needed to go out and play games. He's a good guy, he worked very hard but didn't get the game time that he was wanting. So it makes sense for him to go away and get some games.
And with Marvin joining up with the squad in Dubai, how found him in the squad, gelled well?
Yeah, gelled very well. He's unfortunately got injured when he was out there. So we'll have to wait and see how long that's going to be, but it looks like maybe 3 to 4 weeks. So it was unfortunate for him, but he settled into the squad well, yeah.
Celtic fans, we've not heard a great deal from Brendan Rodgers recently, with the team being out in Dubai, of course. So what do you make then of your manager's thoughts on the transfer window? Are you happy with that, or would you like to see some more action at the moment? 01419511025. We are on Twitter at Clyde SSB as well. First and foremost, Mark, Marvin Kompare, he's just come in. Celtic fans would have been looking forward to seeing him, but they're going to have to wait a little bit longer because he's out for round about a month with a calf injury.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. Must be very frustrating for the player and for Brendan Rodgers when you've got a new signing in, you've got it in a position that you've been looking to strengthen for a while, and then the fella picks up an injury at the winter training camp. So that may be good news for the likes of Christopher Ayer, Dedrick Boyata, Josip Simunovic are all still there, so they're the other three. Kompare makes up the fourth man, and it'll be interesting to see at the end of the window how the central defensive lineup looks for Celtic. There might still be, you never know, want to go out and maybe want to come in, so we'll keep an eye on it.
You can understand, Alex, when you hear Brendan Rodgers saying that injury doesn't change his January plans. You can understand that, because Marvin Kompare can't play in the Europa League anyway.
Yeah.
So for a calf injury which is going to keep you out 3 to 4 weeks, that would seem a very knee-jerk reaction to then change your plans, would it not, on the back of that?
Yeah, well, listen, I think they would like the boy to have been obviously up and running by now, going over to Dubai to do the winter training. And it's disappointing from the boy, from a point of view, a personal point of view. However, I don't think Brendan Rodgers is the type to panic. He mentioned that in his commentary there, and what he was saying about, they've got plenty of reserve. Mark just touched upon it there. They've got three fit guys who are very competent, who have been pretty much at the forefront of the whole campaign. nothing really much changes. I think there'll be a little bit of frustration for Brendan Rodgers that there hasn't been stuff done. I think a lot of people will try to get their business done sooner rather than later. But I think the key thing that Brendan mentioned there for, from a Celtic point of view, is they need to bring quality, and it has to be better than what they've got, and it's going to take them forward for the great work that they've done so far.
Robbie's a Celtic fan in Dublin. He's going to be our first caller of the evening. 0141 951 1025, if you'd like to join us. Hi, Robbie.
Alright, lads, how are you getting on?
Good, not bad, Robbie. You?
Yeah, just something that's just in there. And it's a pity to see him go, because I always thought he had a, if that was Celtic, maybe Hibs at the time. But it's got a big move for Henderson.
So, oh, is this Liam Henderson? Yeah.
Yeah, as I said, it's a big challenge for him, but it's something that a lot of other players will keep an eye on and watch closely, like with interest, to see, you know what I mean, how he'll fit in there, how he'll progress, and, you know, hopefully get into the first team or whatever. And something, you know, that a lot of Scottish players, one area they haven't gone towards, you know what I mean, are kind of mid it, like, in latter years. So as I said, look, the best of luck with him. And how do you think he'll fare, like, for what we've seen? Like, I know, you know, he never got a chance at Celtic. I thought, you know, when he moved to Hibs, I thought that was going to end up on a permanent deal, and he would have, you know, had a few good years there, but that never materialised either. So how do you think, like, where do you see him going in the next 12 months 24 months, whatever?
Mark, this Liam Henderson one's interesting because it can't have come as a surprise given how infrequently he's featured for Celtic under Brendan Rodgers. But notwithstanding that, Robbie is not alone. I've seen a lot of Celtic fans certainly wishing him all the best, obviously, but saying, you know, it's a bit of a shame that he's gone. What do you make of that move, Liam Henderson to Barry?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you think he made a good contribution. You know, and one thing that he's got in the field, he's only 21. I thought he was, you know, maybe 23, 24, because he's been around the periphery of the first team and, you know, made his debut 3-4 years ago. So he is a quality football player, as Robbie said. He had a good spell at Hibs as well, under Alan Stubbs, I think it was. But the fact that he has played at first team level for Celtic, he clearly feels that he's capable and that he has the quality of being a first team player somewhere. And what I like about it, and he went to Norway as well for a spell a couple of years ago.
He went to Rosenborg, didn't
he? Yeah, is that the boy, I think you get some guys that, you know, if you want to just say Celtic and Rangers in this country, that some young players that are just happy to say, yeah, well, I'm with Celtic or Rangers, even though they might be 35th choice, but they just want to be for Celtic or Rangers. Whereas rather than saying, like, well, you know, I'd rather go to St Mirren or Morton or Rosenborg or Barry or, you know, Dundalk or Glentoran or whenever, to go and get some first team football and go and find out what it's about. So I'm full of praise for guys like that. Does Liam Henderson have a long term future at Celtic? No, I don't think so. But I wish him the best, because he is a quality midfielder and he will go on to have a really good career. Whatever that's going to be permanently, we don't know, but he's a good football player.
Alex, is that a fair point, that perhaps Scottish players don't travel particularly well? Is it encouraging in that respect? Because I'm sure there would have been Scottish clubs that would have taken Liam Henderson.
I've got to commend the boy for going to Italy. I know it's Serie B, I think he's going to the fourth in it, but the fact that he's willing to take a chance to go over there, you know, the different culture, different style of play, it's got to be commended. I've got to say, when he was at Hibs, I thought he was absolutely
schoolboy error from Alex Ray. That's his show fee being deducted.
That's him on the phone now. But no, going back to the boy, when I was at Hibs, I was at St Mirren, and I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Middle to front, he was excellent. He was one of these players that could go and take the game by the scruff of the neck, make things happen, because he had that ability. So, you know, you've got to commend him on that. And as like Mark said, I really don't believe that he has any future going forward with Celtic, but he's obviously got some time left in his contract. Celtic will be trying to maximise that as well. He does well over there.
That's a permanent move. That's him.
Is that him officially going there?
He's gone, yep.
All right, congratulations.
I know there was talk of a loan, but it's a permanent move. Robbie, I'm going to ask you to second guess Brendan Rodgers here, which might not be easy. What do you think it was about Liam Henderson that Brendan Rodgers didn't quite see fitting into his team?
Number one, like, I don't know. You can't put a finger on it. Like, you know, it's his position. Like, I know, or I could easily say, oh, look, there was enough players in that position. I don't know if he's still, like, his age-wise, he's 21. He needs to bring a more physical side. side of his game into it. No, you know, I always think Toddy was just missing that thing, like that bit of edge, like that extra edge. You know, as I said, I haven't seen, you know, I would have loved to have seen more of him. You know what I mean? A few games we've seen him, like he came on here 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there, and. As I said, that's why it's going to be interesting. Like, and I will keep an eye on it. And I really do hope, you know, this move works out with him. I've met him a couple of times. He's a lovely chap, very friendly fella, and always accommodating the youngsters, the photographs, and everything around the stadium and everything. And as I said, I really do hope he makes a career of it and everything works out with him.
I mean, Mark, I think it's 25 minutes this season. That tells its own story, really. Liam Henderson. You know, it was a game against Dundee, I think it was, where he came off the bench. So clearly not in the plans. The question asked Robbie there, what do you think it was? How does he stack up against the other midfielder Celtic have?
Well, you know, it's for me, it's quite simple. He's up against quality players in, for example, Scott Brown. You then look at Tom Rogic, Olivier Nsham, Callum McGregor, Nia Beaton, Stuart Armstrong, the list is endless. So the good thing is the boys decided, look, it's not going to work for me here. I've had a taste of it. He's won a couple of medals, couple of league medals and stuff like that. I'm going to go to Bari. I'm going to embrace this opportunity in Italy. And good luck to him, rather than say some guys that just want to hang about for the sake of it. So he's been at Celtic at a time, particularly in the past 18 months, where some of the players have been in exceptional form and he's not been able to budge them.
Stephen Ray's on Twitter. He says, Brendan managed to squeeze everything out of the squad left by Dyla. The business done in the summer was average at best, and this window feels like the same old. In all my years following Celtic, I can hardly ever remember a time when we strengthened from a position of strength. Let's speak to John in Greenock. Hi, John.
Evening, boys. I'm very disappointed with Celtic up and out. I've got £200 million in the bank. There's two guys out injured just in with that big copper tonight, and the boy Armstrong, that's 2 months they're going about. Henderson's going to Italy, and who's the other one? It's away. Somebody else went away there.
Fyrchenko.
So that's four away. Nobody's in yet. Is it possible to bring a boy Christie back for Aberdeen? Is that possible?
I think the loan's until the end of the season.
Yeah.
John, you should be able to know the detail of the contract. If you know Celtic have got £200 million in the bank, you've obviously got an insight into the statements.
It doesn't matter which school you go, you can count up £30 million and say £20 million. I've counted up here, it's about £200 million they've got.
In the bank. And so Celtic don't pay any wages, they don't pay any bills, they've got no outgoings. John. Everything just comes in and sits in the bank. They've no outgoings.
No, but they've got £7 million there for Van Dijk.
John, there's nowhere near £200 million in the bank, I would imagine. I've never seen Celtic's bank statement, but I'd be very, very surprised if there's £200 million in the bank.
They get £7 million there for the Van Dijk deal, and it's not going to cost.
And where's that 193 coming from?
I'll tell you what we can agree on, John, and I think what you're getting at, Mark. What we can agree on is that Celtic have money. They've done well.
Of course, absolutely, they've got money.
So
yes.
Let's look at John's point from that.
Let's be a wee bit more realistic.
Absolutely.
They're having money, and then they're having £200 million, and they've not got £200 million. So,
but what about the more general point?
Listen, the Celtic supporters and Brendan Rodgers and people at the club will want to see the squad strengthen, and I'd like to see them strengthen the squad as well. You'd like to see a couple of more quality players come in, freshen it up. Absolutely. But what I've always said as well, Gordon, and it applies to every club, to every manager, and for every supporter, just to take a wee step back and be mindful that there is no point in spending money for the sake of it. Whether Celtic have got 10, 20, 30 million there in a kitty for Brendan Rodgers to go and spend when he sees fit on whoever he thinks is going to enhance his squad. So if they find the right player, yeah. I mean, I think if they found the right player, Celtic would be willing to break their transfer record, which is approximately £6 million, give or take. So if the right guy became available at 7, 8, 9, I think the money's there to go and do it. But there's no point in just spending that for the sake of it. So it's about getting the right people, not just bringing in players for the sake of it. And I'll let you know that as well. Yeah. Even though Celtic in Scottish terms are cash rich, you've still got a budget, and when you're a manager, you want to make sure that you spend it wisely.
Yeah, I actually think that Brendan Rodgers will have some deals in the pipeline. I think before the transfer window closes, I'm certain they'll bring in a couple of players. And I think it's just a general frustration because nothing's actually quite happened as such. On the frustration of Compere been out for a month, Lewis Morgan going back to St Mirren as well, so they're not actually seeing anything that's up front in the next couple of weeks. But I'm absolutely certain. Listen, Celtic do their business very well. Their recruitment department's been brilliant in recent years, so
It's just still 14. Window closes 14 days tonight, so there's still, you know, a full 2 weeks to go
do some business.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, what would you like to see?
They've been crying out for a centre-half for about the last 5 months now, right? They've been crying out for a centre-half. They've been putting Beaton in, and they've been putting this other guy in. Two guys was on the treatment table there as well. The boy went away, and the other big was, I can't even say his
name. Is it the boy Ayer?
No, they brought that boy in. They shouldn't have bought an out-and-out centre-half. That's it, about 4 or 5 months ago. Two's on the treatment table. They're just holding back, Celtic. Well, they're going back to the biscuit tin mentality.
But John, Compeer's only out for, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. That's surely not enough to go and want to sign someone else.
We've got Hibs and Hearts coming up in the next couple of weeks. They're going to be hard games.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not, but you're not going to sign someone on the back of a 3-week-long injury, surely.
No, but we should have had somebody signed about 4 months ago, mate. We're putting Beaton in the next minute.
John,
you're
right. In an ideal world, I think everybody would acknowledge that Celtic would have wanted to bring in a defender in the window. I would agree with you, but again, it goes back to the point, and I've said this a few times in the programme. Centre halves, if you're looking for real quality, let's take down south, for example. Michael Keane, $25 million from Burnley to Everton. Ben Gibson, valued at $20 million by Middlesbrough. Harry Maguire, $20 million to Leicester from Hull. So Celtic are not in that ballpark. And where maybe Celtic have spoiled themselves or spoiled the supporters in recent years is, for example, Virgil van Dijk, nicking them for £2-3 million from Holland. You can't always do that. And if Celtic found somebody at £7-9 million, great. But does that guarantee he's better than what they've got? And so Brendan Rodgers might be thinking, saying, we did identify, we saw somebody, it was £3 or 4 million or 5 million, but I'm not sure about him. I'd rather wait. And if somebody else pops up in the next window or the summer, and it might cost me 7 or 8, I've got the money to go and buy him, because I've not spent the 3 and 4 and somebody that I'm not sure about.
Part of the problem as well is, if you'd have signed a £4 or 5 million centre half in August, you know, that window, you would have ended up with 5 centre halves at the club, and you can't be top heavy. Brendan Rodgers is saying about the actual size of squad as well, the continuity also. It's about getting one out and been doing the right things, as you said.
Okay, thanks to John in Greenock. Tony's on Twitter. He says Henderson will do well over there. The pace of the game's slower than Scotland, and that suits technical players like Liam. We're going to hear from Martin Canning. He's been discussing Rangers' approach for Hamilton's Greg Docherty, and we'll take more of your calls after the travel with Amber.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com, backing Scottish football all season long. Please gamble responsibly.
Mark Guidi and Alex Ray here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We heard from Brendan Rodgers in the first part of the programme. Lots of Celtic fans trying to get in touch and have their say on the transfer window so far. Robert is in Glasgow. Hi, Robert. Hello, Robert.
Hi there, guys.
How are you?
Robert.
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks.
Good stuff. What's your point tonight, Robert?
I just wanted to make a point and just see if you had read it into it. It was about Gamboa supposedly wanting out a Celtic. I'd read a few articles about it, and then it left me with a feeling. I feel as if our defence is quite short at the moment, and some of Lustig's performances have been quite poor. It only leaves you with Anthony Ralston, and he's still playing for the development side. What's your point in that, guys?
Well, Mark, there's nothing concrete to suggest that Christian Gamboa is leaving, so, you know, it's a bit of a hypothetical. I'm sure if he does, that will change things for Brendan Rodgers. But what do you make of the overall picture as Robert lays it out there?
In terms of right back area, I think that the Christian Gamboa, you know, again, if I'm him, clearly he's, you know, he's not going to get a lot of game time. So if I'm him, I would be looking to try and get out this window if I can. Now, whether that suits Celtic or not, I don't know. I know Anthony Ralston was injured. I don't know if he's fit again, if he's back playing or not. But certainly, if Anthony Ralston's fit, I would imagine he would be seen as being the direct understudy to Mikael Lustig. Lustig sometimes gets a bit of a hard time from the Celtic supporters, I think. Listen, he's far from perfect, but I think he's been a good servant. I think he's aerial threat in both boxes. He chips him with a goal now and again. Sometimes I think at the highest level in Europe, when you see him playing, his distribution can leave a lot to be desired, and he costs Celtic possession every now and again. And at the last Old Firm game as well, there, the 0-0 game on December the 30th, you know, the first half hour, he was very, very shaky for Celtic. So maybe longer term, not necessarily a priority, but bearing in mind he's going to the World Cup, so he's going to have another really long summer. That might be an area that Brendan Rodgers is looking at.
I suppose high hopes for Anthony Ralston, though. Yeah. That would be why I would imagine that Celtic, and Brendan Rodgers in particular, aren't making too many quick decisions in that area, because the next couple of months for Anthony Ralston development will be important, you would imagine.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, I would suspect that Anthony Ralston will probably be ahead of Gamboa now as well, Mark, you know, because his performance and the fact, I think they gave him a 4.5 year contract recently, didn't they? So it gives him that belief that he's going to be part of the infrastructure going forward. And as you said, Mark, the boy Gamboa is 28 now. He's sitting there, and we've got a World Cup coming up as well. It's a really a dilemma for him, and then Brendan Rodgers. But Brendan will do what's right for Celtic, that's for sure.
You want to come back in, Robert?
It was just to touch on basically the what would you do though if you've only if Gamboa does go, and then obviously Lustig, as you can see here, across the years, he's had a few injuries. If he is struggling, he's not got any really backup there.
Well, that's the thing, Mark. I think the picture would obviously change. What Robert's point there is, if Christian Gamboa leaves, so
you would, you know, look, if Gamboa leaves, I don't think it's a huge loss to Celtic. And if an injury happens, then you deal with it. You might have to improvise if Anthony Ralston's not available. So what do you do? I don't know. Maybe Compere could move to right back, or Boyata could move to right back. You know,
they could go to a back three as well, Mark.
You know, they've done a few times.
They could go to a back three. Listen, if it really came, Kieran Tierney's played at right back for Scotland, so they could do that and fill some. So I don't think it's a major problem if Christian Gamboa leaves the club.
It's all hypothetical as well, because Lustig's played 39 games. He's probably one of the ones that's actually played most of the games for Celtic. Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about a guy that's actually featured on a regular basis.
Okay, thanks to Robert in Glasgow. Let's hear from Martin Canning, shall we, the Hamilton Accies boss, and this might interest Rangers fans as well. He says Greg Docherty won't get distracted by the rumours linking him with a move to Rangers. The Ibrox club made an approach for the midfielder towards the end of last week, but Canning's warning they won't be bullied into selling at a cut price just because they have the lowest budget in the league.
Yeah, well, it's not me that deals, but I was just saying the same thing in there. That's all Ronnie, the chairman, that will deal with all that kind of thing. What I find out is when Ronnie phones me and says, listen, the club's accepted an offer for Greg Docherty, and that'll be when Greg Docherty moves. Until that happens, Greg Docherty's a Hamilton player. Spoke to Greg yesterday, and you've spoke to him plenty yourself. He's a very mature, level-headed young boy, so his full focus is on making sure that he's committed to Hamilton and going doing his job. And if something happens, then, like I've said plenty of times before a game, that if something happens for Greg, as a club, we've done our job properly. We've brought a kid for a 9-year-old through our academy into our first team, and we've sold him on to a club that it'll then go and obviously hopefully develop him further, and Greg will go on and have a good career out of the game, and that'll be everybody here will be happy, and we'll pat Greg in the back and thank him for his work here and wish him all the best. Michael's another one, it's been fantastic for us. And what will be again, I don't know what's happening that one, and that's the guys in there said the same thing to me, and that's the first I'm known about it. So if there's something in the reports this morning, I haven't seen it. But again, Michael's similar, he's come through the academy here, he's done well here. He's played a lot of games, he's captained the club at a young age as well, and he's had his opportunities, and again, if it does end up that Michael moves on, it's another one of these things. But like I say, that's out with my control, and it's obviously the club will have evaluation, and these guys, what they feel is a fair reflection of their talents. And if that's met, I'll get the phone call to let me know what's been done, and until then they're our players, and they keep their head down, they work hard.
Finances at the club, you know, they're good and they're steady. You don't need to sell players if the price isn't right. You don't want to be selling players for a cut price, because clubs maybe think Hamilton's the smallest team with the smallest budget, they could maybe get away with knocking a couple of hundred off the price tag.
No chance. If you know Ronnie, that's even less likely. he's a ruthless man in terms of, you know, he knows, and he's got his own ideas, and he knows what he wants to get for people, and I'm pretty sure he runs the club great. But again, like I say, that's out with my control. I don't know what the offer will be, what the offer they're expecting to get, what they would accept. So that's down to Ronnie, like I say.
So that was Martin Canning giving us his opinion on the Greg Docherty situation. Rangers fans, after a few loan deals in the last week, is that one that you would like to see the club continue to go for, Alex? As a former Rangers midfielder, you seem like the best person to ask. What do you make of his credentials and in terms of how much Rangers should want him?
Well, listen, it depends on what position he is. I watched him play in central midfield, Mark, when Rangers were playing there, and I think it was 4-1 on the night. He just looked as if he struggled for physicality as an out-and-out midfielder, but from middle to front, he was very industrious and things, and I think that was his attribute. So if they're going to bring him in for that position, $350,000 have obviously knocked that back. What I will say about Hamilton is they do a brilliant job in developing kids, and they're probably in a position where, you know, you look at some of MacArthur, some of the boys that have sold in recent years as well, they always try and get a decent price for them. I would suspect that the Rangers will probably come back in with an increased offer. It's always going to be the low ball. It's just part and parcel with it. And I know Chris Boyd was saying recently that they're trying to unsettle people, but you don't go in with a top drawer offer. You always test the water and see what the reaction is.
I think Greg Docherty, I've raved about him, Gordon, in this programme for a year or so. I was disappointed when he wasn't in the Scotland squad a few months ago. I know he's now in the Scotland squad, so I think he is worth in excess of £500,000. Absolutely, I agree with Alec. I think middle to front, he reminds me a bit of John McGinn. His style of play and the way he attacks, he's not as dynamic at the moment as John McGinn. John McGinn's a level above him, but I think he's got it in him to really take a hold of a game and be dynamic. And I gave you a wee exclusive a couple of weeks ago on the programme, Gordon, that Rangers were in for Jordan Jones at Kilmarnock, which was true, and I'll give you another one tonight, that they watch out for Preston coming in for Greg Docherty. Obviously Alec Neil and Frankie McAvoy are well aware of him, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Preston come in with a bid that would be substantial.
So the race for Greg Docherty seems to be heating up then. Quentin's a Rangers fan in Saltcoats. How are you?
Hi, how are you getting on, boys? All right?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. What's your point tonight?
Oh, I'm absolutely... Did you want to talk about these loan signings? We've got more loans up there than Wonga. What's happening in the next 4 or 5 months up at the Big House? The manager's on to me, and all the loan signings are to me.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously is about the season tickets. We're not a daft. Big Dave maybe think he's king, but I'm a big queen, and I'm absolutely raging here. I'm no happy bunny here. I'm no happy bunny at all. I've been coming here, the Big House, Ibrox, since I was 4 years old, bouncing my free feather's knee, and I'm no happy at all. It's a disgrace. You're taking us for a ride here, Dave.
Can I ask you a question, please?
Yes, right. You can.
What I want to know is, what is the issue with getting a loan signing in?
What's wrong? Well, why are they off for 4 or 5 months and the manager, I'm not going to make any commitment?
Well, the thing is, they made a commitment, a financial commitment in the summer of the best part of £8 million, bringing players in, and it didn't turn out right. This way you get an opportunity to look at guys. These guys are well known to the Scottish game as well. So, you know, for me, I feel as if the actual signings that Rangers have made are very good, and I think they'll bear the fruits of that over the coming months.
Well, certainly enhance the squad.
Without a doubt, Mark.
And listen, see, in an ideal world, you would want to make them permanent, but the upside of it is you get a chance to look at them to see if they're fit. Listen, on paper, you look at their CVs, Russell Martin, Jason Cummins, Graham...
Murphy.
JB Murphy. Definitely got the credentials, definitely got the ability to go and play for Rangers, but let's see about the mentality aspect. And I don't think there'll be a problem for any of the three of them. I think they'll handle it quite easily. So you've got a chance to look at them and see if the only way you can get this kind of quality in initially is from a loan deal. There's nothing wrong with that. At the end of the day, as we say, what's the most important thing? The next game. And if those guys are there for the next game, you review everything at the end of the season. You see where you are financially, you see what the other clubs are thinking about, and it gives you an opportunity to go and do something. So yes, in an ideal world, you get them signed 3 or 4 year deals, but if it has to be a loan deal, it's better than not getting them at all.
When you talked about Greg Docherty there, Alex, and both of you spoke quite highly of him, what about that Rangers midfield? Because purely in numbers, it's busy. It's a busy area. Yep. Now that Andy Halliday's come back and Michael O'Halloran's come back. I'm not saying that it's therefore full of quality or the type of quality that Rangers might want, but it's certainly a lot of bodies there.
Gordon, I've got to be honest with you. I was looking at the Rangers game maybe about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I was looking at the bench, and I felt as if they were really, really light in terms of numbers. There was a lot of young kids coming through, Barjonas and Kelly and that were coming through, and I just thought, you know, when you look at the opposition that round about you, you look at Aberdeen, you look at what Celtic's strength and depth, you know, and you look at Hibs, Hearts, they're really, really strong in that department. I just felt even bringing in numbers, obviously Mark's just touched upon there, the three main players, Murphy,
Cummins Martin.
And Martin, I just felt as if the three of them would add. I think they've got real quality about them, but, you know, you've also got the boy Goss coming in, technically not bad midfielder, with a wee bit of pedigree coming through from Manchester United. So I actually think the recruitment that they've done on the back of Doherty and obviously the boy down at Kilmarnock as well. So
if those come off,
if you can pull them off, I would be saying. But this is one, what you have to be aware of, Gordon, is every single transfer window Rangers can be going out and getting 7, 8 players time after time, because it's not a recipe for success. You need to get some sort of balance, and you need to get longevity, and it's just nipping and tucking, because it becomes a nightmare every transfer window. You're the big massive turnover.
Mark's a Celtic fan in Aberdeen. Hi Mark.
Hi guys, how you doing?
What's your point tonight, Mark?
It's really about Celtic's business in the transfer window and the comments made by the panel earlier. if you look at, I'll give you three examples, Scott Sinclair, Dembele, Patrick Roberts. If you think for a minute Celtic was their first choice, you're totally wrong. What Celtic had to do was wait for the shakedown, other clubs having a bite at them, then weighing up their options, and then realising that Celtic's a stepping stone to the next thing for them. And that's why they've come to Celtic. And that's the market that Celtic's shopping in. So I don't expect any concrete stuff to happen to Celtic until the last day or two of the transfer window. Because the market they're looking in, the kind of players, it's not loans, it's not £200,000 players. I know they've taken a young lad from St Mirren, but they put him back as a development prospect. But the market that Celtic's shopping in to improve that team, these guys have got other options, and Celtic will need to wait because Celtic won't be a first choice.
It's a fair enough theory, I suppose, Mark. You look at the English market, down south, Mark in Aberdeen there, thinking that Celtic perhaps like to wait a bit. I mean, I know that he mentioned Moussa Dembele. His situation was a bit different because he benefited in many ways from, you know, the cross-border deal which saw Celtic get him a bit of a cut price compared to what English clubs would have had to pay. But what do you make of Mark's idea then, that Celtic's business may be done a bit later on?
Yeah, it might well be done. Look, again, it's, you know, it's similar to what we're saying about loan deals. You know, you've got 31 days in January to get them. Now, if it means getting the right player and you get them on the 31st of January, rather than getting somebody that you think you're not sure about, but you're just signing for the sake of signing somebody early and keeping people happy, then that's the wrong strategy. So it's about getting the right player in, and whether you can, the quicker you can get them in, the better. But as long as you get them in, and I think that's what Celtic will be doing. They will not, despite what some supporters say, despite some of them thinking there's tens of millions in the bank waiting to be spent on players, it will be spent if the right people become available. But there's no point in wasting money.
Anything in particular that you've identified, Mark?
Well, I personally have no faith in the centre-back position, either Simonovic or Bayata. I think the two of them, well, Simonovic was a known signal before he came. Bayata, to me, is a slightly better sort of, slightly better than what we had before, but still, not for me. I'd rather pair Christopher Ayer with a good experienced guy, and then another good experienced guy there as backup, definitely right back.
Could Marvin Compeyre not be that guy, Mark?
I think he will be, but I would still be looking for one other to come in there, so that we've got two experienced guys and Christopher Ayer to come on. And I definitely a centre forward, because I think Dembele will go, and to be honest with you, that wouldn't bother me.
Okay, we've probably not heard the end of that one way or another. I'm sure there'll be plenty more speculation surrounding that before this transfer window closes. Remember, in the second hour of tonight's show, folks, we're going to have a big debate on the future of Hampden. It's nearing decision time for the Scottish FA in terms of where they want the future home of Scottish football to be. We're going to hear from Scotland defender Andrew Robertson. We're going to be joined live in the studio by Hampden Park Chief Peter Dallas, and lots of other people contributing to that. But we need your opinions as well. 01419511025. More of your calls coming up after the travel with Amber.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Download the app and score a tap-in. Please gamble responsibly.
Listening to the traffic and travel, Alex, I know that you live in the countryside. There's no chance you're here for the week.
Oh no, tell us about it. I was almost 2 hours from Ibrox yesterday to Strathblane. It was horrendous.
Well, listen, there's a nice couch in there if you need it. Just say the word.
Therapy couch, what can we use, lot?
Get a blanket looked out for you, you can stay all week.
Is Kivo's house empty? Is he back yet?
Well, he must be back soon. Seems like he's been away for about a month. I'm sure he's back with us on Friday night.
I doubt he sees tan.
Can you imagine his face as well when he steps off the plane to this? He thinks he's been away for
Janet,
his warm weather
let's
training camp.
Do a U-turn.
Anyway, enough about that. Hugh Keevans will be back with us later on in the week. Our debate about Hampden's about 20 minutes or so away, so in the meantime, let's take some more calls. Mikey is in Edinburgh. Hi, Mikey.
Hi there. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, what's your point tonight, Mikey?
Good evening, lad. Sorry.
Hi there.
My point is, last year, Brendan Rodgers, or it may have been like just before the start of the year, he was talking about how January is like our most important time to strengthen the team. Just so we get them ready for the qualifiers, because as we all know, just after the season finishes, the qualifiers start, and we need to have a team bedded in, or we just get run over sometimes if we're not strong enough. I was just wondering what you were thinking, because it looks like I was saying Morgan and Compeyre, which, to be fair, the centre-back position was needed a long time ago, But this team that we've got now, maybe last year they were good enough to qualify. This year they're just not really hitting the heights that they were. Now, I'm not saying they can't get back to that. I was just wondering what you guys were thinking.
Alex, where's the balance? Because what Mikey says seems to make sense. If you can strengthen in January in a meaningful way, then the players are raring to go for the next season. However, people always tell you that also January is a really difficult window.
Yeah.
So where's the balance there?
Well, listen, the one thing I will say is Brendan Rodgers will know what he needs. That's a fact. You know, when you think about the experience he has, he will know what the team needs going forward. He's identified that he needs a centre-half. He's brought one in, which is, you know, everybody was screaming for it. May well have been 4 or 5 months late when you look at some of the European results, you know, with that back quality. Again, we've got 2 weeks to this window closes. I'm absolutely certain that it will bring in a few more players, and for numerous factors. If you consider, it's always a good wee boost. Prior to the window closing, Celtic were looking a bit jaded. You know, some of the performances, it was a poor month for them in terms of point-wise, what they've gotten recent last year. So when you take that into consideration, you get a couple of new faces in, it bolsters everybody's enthusiasm and things. It's just a wee kickstart that they may well need getting back into the games that are coming up, and then obviously the Europa Cup in February. So listen, I think there's a wee bit of anxiety because everyone else is doing a lot of business at the moment. You know, you look across the road at Rangers, probably need as much strengthening as most, and the Celtic fans are going a wee bit anxious. But I'm absolutely certain Peter Lawwell will back Brendan. The one thing about Celtic is they've backed him on all fronts. When you hear about all the stuff and all the stuff behind the scenes, he wants for nothing. So Brendan will be, if you ask any manager what they, you know, they want to strengthen all the time. It's always more and more and more. Mm. And he'll most certainly get that come the end of this month, I'm sure of it.
Mark, what do you make of that then? Because Mikey's talking about he does want to see business now so that it's ready for next season. But again, like I said to Alex, we always hear that this is a difficult window, don't we? We always hear that. And in terms of, we look at Compare, for instance, if you go for a certain calibre of player or a player from a certain league, then chances are they're cup tied for Europe and so on. And that's where Marvin Compare will be ready for next season. But what about any other potential targets?
Yeah, as you know, January is a difficult month to maybe get exactly what you're looking for. But I do get Mikey's point in terms of it is viewed upon as an important month for Celtic for a number of reasons. One being, if you can get somebody in early and give them 4 or 5 months to settle in ahead of the qualifiers rather than potentially 4 or 5 days, because the qualifiers are coming, what, first week in July? Gordon, for Celtic last week in June, they've got 4 rounds, unless I'm mistaken. If they win the league, Celtic are champions, they've got 4 rounds to play. Now, the law averages, tough task to get through the 4 rounds again. And I think Celtic, they're on record, was it during the AGM or something like that, is saying they kind of budget for 1 out of 3, maybe 2 out of 3 Champions League opportunities. So when you look at it, to do 3 in a row, get through all those qualifying ties, it's going to be a hell of an ask for Celtic to do it for a number of reasons. You know, luck of the draw, injuries, maybe losing a player, not getting the right one in, whatever it is. And if they don't manage it in August, then, you know, the supporters have got to show a bit of patience and understanding as well, because they are notoriously difficult to get through. Celtic have managed it the past 2 years. But anyway, to get back to the point, yeah, if you can get 1 or 2 in just now that you feel that you think are going to be first team players, then do it just now to give them that bed and into.
Mark, it all boils down to the quality. If you can identify quality for the right price and you're getting the value for money as well, that's obviously an important thing. It's just about getting them in at the right time, and I'm sure he'll be doing that.
Mikey, you want to come back in?
Aye, thanks guys. I know what you're saying there, because there's a lot of inflated prices in January as well, no. But no, I just didn't want, and Rodgers end up getting annoyed with the board, because he comes in and says one thing, we can't make any signings. Now, that may not always be the board's fault, but if it just makes him look to be like he's just changing his mind, or I just want to make him like annoyed, and we end up losing Brendan Rodgers, obviously, if over something so stupid like that. But no, good points, guys. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you to you, Mikey. That was Mikey, the Celtic fan in Edinburgh. 01419511025 if you want to have your say. One of the big ish transfer stories doing the rounds today, guys, that we haven't really discussed yet, is Stephen Naismith. Looks like he's closing in on a move to Hearts. You can never really tell how these things pan out, but on the face of it, that looks like a seriously
brilliant
good bit of
business. I think it's a brilliant bit of business. If you can get him with the attitude he has, with the ability he has, the kind of desire for the game, I think it'll be a brilliant bit of business for Hearts. I think they need a little bit of boost. They need a wee bit of firepower. Yeah, they've managed to sort out their defensive issues. I think it's six in the bounce, clean sheets, clean which sheets, is which is a record, which is brilliant for that point of view. But yeah, as soon as you sort that out, you then have to identify what the weakness was, and it's obviously scoring goals. So he would be a tremendous acquisition.
You go along with that, Mark?
Yeah, and I take it he complained Sunday.
Gordon. I think that's the hope, certainly.
So
at this
obviously,
stage,
you know, particularly with Kyle Lafferty being suspended, as far as I know, for Sunday. So you know that gives him that. And I like Stephen Ace, but now what is he? 31, maybe 32 at the most. I think I don't think he has anything to prove in the Scottish game, but I think he'll feel come up full of hunger, full of desire, and he'll think, okay, I've got 4 months to either go and get a right good permanent deal off Hearts if he settles and there's an amicable relationship there, or he said, well, I'm putting myself in the shop window, where that means he ends up back at Rangers, he ends up going back down south, whatever it may be. But I think on paper it's a terrific signing. I think he'll do well. I think he'll go score goals. He'll be good in training, very good professional, so he'll be good about the club as well. And on all fronts, I think it's a good bit of business.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, certainly it wasn't so long ago that he was a really a main player in the Scottish national team. He's sort of dropped out of that ever so slightly towards, in fact, during most of the last campaign. Alex, when you look at a player like that, experience is the obvious thing, but what else will he bring?
Well, I just mentioned it, Gordon. He brings a desire. He's got a hunger for the game, which is brilliant. It's infectious. If you want a player to kind of lead defensively from the front, he's one of the guys that goes and starts the heavy press. And in the modern game, teams are trying to play out for the back, he would be ideal for that. Over the years, he's managed to get amongst the goals as well.
Brilliant in there. He's only 5'8", 5'9".
So it's always the timing of his jump as well.
The spring is, it reminds me, remember Eric Black, fantastic spring, that ability to kind of hang in the air. So see, set pieces, he's a fantastic threat as well.
Beat the pundit with goals in the Scottish Sun. The SPFL and EPL latest every Monday, Wednesday and Saturday.
Remember, in the second hour, we're going to be debating the future of Hampden. We're going to be joined live in the studio by Hampden chief Peter Dallas. We're going to speak on the phone to Scotland and Liverpool defender Andrew Robertson. Been quite a week for him as well. Looking forward to hearing what he's got to say. But before we do that, let's play Beat the Pundit. Mark Guidi and Alex Ray are both standing by. They are desperate, let me tell you, desperate to take you on, but we need someone to get on the phone and take part. So if you want to play Beat the Pundit, phone us right now. 0141 951 1025. And you could play Beat the Pundit after the news.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Bet and play and pull a result out of the bag. Please gamble responsibly.
Mark Guidi and Alex Ray here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Remember, we're going to dedicate the second hour to a debate about the future of Hampden. It's getting to that stage where a decision is not too far away, so we want to get everyone out there to get in touch and give us your thoughts. It's 01419511025 on the phones. Loads of you have already been in touch on Twitter. That's great. I'll read as many out as I possibly can, but get in touch on the phone lines as well. And remember, we're going to hear from Scotland defender Andrew Robertson a bit later on. But before we do that,
Beat the Pundit with goals in the Scottish Sun. The SPFL and EPL latest every Monday, Wednesday and Saturday.
It is of course time to play Beat the Pundit. Tonight's contestant is Ved. He's from Jordan Hill. How are you, Ved?
I'm doing well, yes. But yourself?
Yeah, can't complain at all. I'm going to toss this coin, so you're at the mercy of the coin. If it's heads, it's Mark Guidi you're going to play, and if it's tails, it's Alex Ray. Does that suit you, Ved?
Okay, yeah, that's
right, good
me,
man,
yeah.
Let's do it. Toss the coin. And at his heads, you're up against Mark Guidi. So let's give him some Clyde 2 in his ear. Make sure that he can't steal your answers. We certainly don't want that. And we'll get the clock set up. Ved, you've got 30 seconds, head to head. Now you can pass. Here's your chance to beat the pundit, okay?
Okay, yeah, on you go.
Which Celtic player's been ruled out after suffering a calf injury?
Marvin Crompia.
At which team are Kelly currently loaning Stuart Finlay from?
Pass.
Which Scottish forward's expected to join Hearts on loan?
Stephen Naismith.
What's the name of Hungary's all-time top goal scorer?
Pass.
Name one Highland League team other than Fraserburgh still in the Scottish Cup.
Nairn County.
And what was the score between Raith Rovers and Ayr United at the weekend? Just take a guess if you don't want to. Take a guess, go on, quick.
2-0.
Okay, that's fine. Let's bring Mark Guidi back. You with us, Mark?
Yes, Gordon.
You are, right, same set of questions to you. You happy?
Yep, go.
Which Celtic player's been ruled out after suffering a calf injury?
Compare.
Which team are Kelly currently loaning Stuart Finlay from?
Newcastle.
Which Scottish forward is expected to join Hearts on loan?
Stephen A. Smith.
What's the name of Hungary's all-time top goal scorer?
Ferenc Puskas.
Name one Highland League team other than Fraserburgh still in the Scottish Cup.
Peterhead.
What was the score between Raith Rovers and Ayr at the weekend?
2-2.
And which Scottish team are nicknamed the Citizens?
No idea.
Okay, ooh, some tricky ones in there tonight. Ved, how are you feeling about that?
Well, I know how I feel about it.
The old nerves get the better of you, did they? Well, let's go through and we'll find out. Because I'll tell you what, it was actually quite close. Celtic player been ruled out after suffering a calf injury. Marvin Compere, easy start for you both, 1-1. Stuart Finlay's currently on loan from Newcastle to Kilmarnock, so Mark Guidi moves into a 2-1 lead. You did get the next one right though, both of you did in fact. Stephen Naismith, the Scottish forward, expected to join Hearts on loan, so Mark Guidi still leads by one. But Ved, unfortunately for you, he stretched his lead in the next one. Hungary's all-time top goal scorer, of course, is Puskas. Mark, it went downhill a bit here. I don't want to offend any Peterhead teams that you still think they're part of the Highland League.
No, do you know what it was? Because I was up in Fraserburgh and to drive Formentine.
Yep, for Martin, yeah. Brora, Cove, so there we are. Yeah, what was the score between Raith Rovers and Ayr at the weekend? It was 1-1. Alex Ray's holding up 1-1 in the finger gesture. I think that's what he was doing anyway. And which Scottish team are nicknamed the Citizens? Edinburgh City.
Oh, okay. No, I'd never got that.
You can see what they did there, you know.
No, I could give Citizens.
They were hard, Ved. They were indeed. You got two, but unfortunately for you, Mark Guidi got four. Hard lines.
Not
good, man. Thanks for taking part. Done. There we are, that was Ved from Jordan Hill taking part in tonight's Beat the Pundit. Now, I'm pleased to say we have been joined live in the studio by Peter Dallas, Managing Director of Hampden Park Limited, the company which runs the stadium, in case anyone didn't know what that was. Peter, thanks first and foremost for joining us. Now, we're getting to a pretty important time, Peter, for Scottish football, whatever way you look at it now. 30th of January, that's less than 2 weeks away, the Scottish FA Board are going to meet to discuss the future of Hampden. Whatever side of the debate you're on, I'm sure you'll all agree it is one which has to take on a whole number of factors. A massive decision. It's officially been the National Stadium since 1925, and we're now in a situation where we stay or we go, essentially. What would your sales pitch be to the reasons why we should remain at Hampden?
Well, Gordon, first and foremost, thank you very much for having me on this evening. You're correct, Hampden Park is the national stadium. It's Scotland's national stadium, as well as obviously being the home of Scottish football. And it is truly the home of Scottish football, on the basis that all of the national bodies sit in at Hampden Park, on level six, as it's referred to, the Scottish FA, the SPFL, the amateurs, the juniors, the women's game, the schools. So it truly is the home of Scottish football. There's clearly a huge debate that is raging just now, and there's a fair bit of misinformation out in the general public, and possibly some mischievous comments out there also. It's just a pleasure to come in and have an opportunity to discuss Hampden with professionals that have been in the game, understand the business, and we're looking forward to chatting that through.
Now, I'm keen to get everyone's thoughts on this. There's lots coming through on Twitter, but we're on the phones as well, 0141 951 1025. Let me put some to you then, Peter, which we hear in this programme quite often. I can see a number of tweets coming in, and one that we get on a number of occasions is the atmosphere. People tell us they don't like the Hampden atmosphere, and that is one of the reasons that they think perhaps the time has come to look elsewhere. What would you say to that?
Quite frankly, it's nonsense. What happens on the football park creates the atmosphere at any stadium. We only have to look back to the Scotland-England game back in June. Anybody who was at that game could not be anything other than taken by the atmosphere. It was actually commented by serious commentators that the Hampden Roar was reborn. No less than Gordon Strachan said he'd never heard a noise like it. Lee Griffiths himself, after scoring the second goal, said he had never in his life heard a roar like it when the second free kick hit the net. And I think we only have to look at Harry Kane, who also said that Hampden is a tough place to come. It was a great atmosphere, one of the best stadiums I've ever played in. We've had various cup finals in recent years with late dramatic winners. And looking at the recent history in the last 5 years, Celtic have clearly won several trophies at the stadium. We've also had Hearts, Hibs, Inverness, with Ross County, also in St Mirren. And I think when you do start to look, even in the recent history, look at the recent history of the stadium, to say you've won the cup at Hampden adds something special to that achievement. We can also look at the Amateur Cup final, Colville Park winning at the stadium in May this year, and Braidhurst High also winning a game 2-1 in the Scottish Schools senior final. So there's a lot of history, a lot of heritage, and when we talk about the atmosphere, there's been many, many great occasions at the stadium.
Let me try and address this with Mark Guidi and Alex Ray then, because I want to try and get through as much of it as I can. Atmosphere always comes up. What do you make of what Peter's sort of defence was there, Mark, and the cases that we always hear against the atmosphere at Hampden?
Yeah, well, I like Hampden. I hope that Scotland stay and that the international games remain at Hampden, and our cup finals, and maybe not so much our semi-finals sometimes, depending on who's involved, but certainly our cup finals. But I mean, just to get to it, Peter, is it purely, from your understanding, is this purely a financial decision by the SFA? Does it all come down to numbers, or is it, you know, because it's all fine and well talking about atmosphere and stuff, and I don't doubt it, I like Hampden. I think there's bits that we could improve on, but generally speaking, I like it. But if it comes down to numbers, then, you know, we need to try and make the numbers work for the good of our game, because there's a lot of financial pressure on the SFA to deliver. We've not been a major tournament for 20 years, so they're losing income. For example, Northern Ireland picked up £9 million for qualifying for the Euros. That's money we could do. So we've got to be realistic as well about the numbers that it's going to take the SFA to pay to make sure we remain there.
Let's speak to Nicky, who's a Rangers fan in Kirkintilloch. Hi, Nicky.
Hi there, how you doing?
Not bad, you?
Hi, good, thanks.
What's your point tonight?
Well, basically, in terms of Hampden, I know obviously the gentleman on there's obviously to pitch it, and I don't doubt for 1 minute that him and other people work very hard behind the scenes. But unfortunately, I'm not one of the people that's bought into Hampden. I've been there quite a lot of occasions, various venues, you know, I've seen ACDC and Springsteen, etc. at Hampden. I've also been to like various cup finals, etc. over the years. And to me, it just doesn't work. I think that atmosphere and sound is all over the place in terms of things like concerts. Been to quite a few Hampden, and it just doesn't sound right. And that's not just me saying that. There's a lot of other people as well. I don't know if it was just the design. I'm not sure. But in terms of football, and ultimately that's what we're speaking about, I just feel as if it's just the wrong type of stadium. It's too far away. When you consider the fact that Ibrox and Parkhead, Tynecastle, you know, the atmosphere there is generated because it's very close to the park. For me, there's always been problems with the pitch. Always seems to cut up quite easily. And the atmosphere is very, how would I say, it's inconsistent, and irrespective of what game. I take away Old Forum games that are always going to be quite hostile irrespective of where it's played. But I just think in terms of Hampden, it doesn't work for me, unfortunately.
Peter sort of addressed some of those points already, Nicky. And by the way, I enjoy the atmosphere at Celtic Park and at Ibrox and at Hampden and various stadiums, you know, across the last couple of years. But would you not agree, Nicky, that sometimes you go to Hampden and you get a great atmosphere, and sometimes it's not so good? And that sort of goes for every stadium, does it not? Is it not very much reflective of what's happening on the pitch? I mean, I'm sure you're a Rangers fan. If Rangers, I'm thinking what year jumps out at me, none at the moment, but when Rangers clinch a dramatic cup final winner at Hampden Park, you're not telling me that that's not got a good atmosphere.
Well, 2002,
for you.
Yeah, was it Lovenkranz last minute? Rangers clinched trebles there and 1999 and 2003. Listen, you're right, Gordon. It's not, and Peter's point right at the top of the hour there, it's about what you create on the pitch that generate. And I know sometimes it can be a two-way thing, but you're right, you could have 60,000 at Parkhead, 50,000 at Ibrox, 60,000 at the Emirates, 70,000 at Old Trafford. Doesn't it guarantee a better atmosphere? It's about what you can produce on the park.
I've been at Ibrox in games as well, when you're thinking, right, okay, they're just looking for that little spark, that goal. But I was actually at 2003 and I was on the top tier in the Rangers end, and you could actually feel it moving. The atmosphere was phenomenal because of what was actually in the park. And I'm very much one of the guys that want to stay at Hampden as well. I was fortunate enough to lead Rangers out in the semi-final of the League Cup, and it was one of my highlights because as a boy I was 34, 35 at that period as well. It was something I'd look forward to my whole life, you know. And I take Nicky's point in saying some of the atmospheres that, you know, some of the grounds on which he's touched upon, you know, Parkhead, Ibrox. But then you have the issue of cup finals and things. Where do you actually play it? If one of the old firms at a toss of a coin, and then it's not just that. If you look at, Peter just touched upon Hibs, and if Hibs won the cup after 100 odd years at Parkhead or Ibrox, would it have the same? Would it have the same? Would it have, Nicky, would it have the same kind of kudos for the players going to the national stadium rather than winning it at Parkhead or Ibrox? It just doesn't work for me that way.
On you go, Nicky.
I think in terms of what you just said there, finals, if a player's got into a cup final, irrespective of the way it's gone, the player's main focus should be to win. It doesn't really matter where they're playing. But I think that, as I say with Hampden, I just don't feel as if it really holds an atmosphere. And I'll give you a prime example. One of the things that Rangers and Celtic fans always tend to complain about, and I agree, is ticket allocation. Now, for me, the ticket allocation should be better. Rangers and Celtic can sell Hampden at a drop of a hat, but when you tend to get to quarterfinals and cup finals, these tickets always seem to be allocated out to other teams. They don't sell them. Some of them come back to us, but you can see in the television there's obviously big gaps in the crowd. Whereas, if maybe we're going to possibly look to change a few ways in which to do things, it might get a bit better.
I think a lot of that's down to the clubs, Nicky, isn't it? The clubs have to sort of negotiate ticket allocations and the way that they're sold, so on, depending on the competition. Peter, another thing that we hear along similar lines, because atmosphere is one thing, but something that tends to go hand in hand, people complain about the view quite simply behind the goals. They talk about the goals being too far away behind, you know what I mean, the stands East behind each goals been too far away. How do we get around that issue then, or what would you say to those who view that as a big criticism?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the view from the stadium, there's clearly three other stadia that are in the equation at the moment, two in the city and through in Edinburgh at Murrayfield. I've been a paying customer at all of these three grounds in the last year. I've been in the very back row of each of these stadia in the last year. Good stadia, absolutely fine. But the experience that I had at each of these three stadia wasn't too much greater than what I expect at Hampden.
What about then, and I'm throwing all the criticisms at you, forgive me, but that's why you're here. Another thing that people tend to complain about, I can see all the tweets coming in as well, is location, transport links, access. I mean, these are things that can't be changed quickly, Peter. So if they are real concerns for people, is that not likely to come to the fore when we have these discussions?
Yeah, in terms of location, Hampden Park's actually better suited to a major cup final than any other stadium in the country. We have two key railway stations, Cathcart, and we've got Kings Park. So from a segregation point of view, that works very well. We've got the new M74 extension less than a mile away from the stadium, so traffic can get away from the stadium. And we've got Aitken Head Road and Kidcart Road with excellent bus services coming back and forward to the city centre regularly. The Scottish FA have also implemented a pilot scheme to have buses, shuttle buses, coming from the city centre. So again, I've visited other stadia. I go to football matches. I have to park the car. I've got to walk 20-25 minutes. So Hampden Park's not any different than any other stadium that's going to have 50,000 plus spectators.
You would accept it can be difficult to get away from though after games, and I appreciate your counter to that is, well, so are the other stadiums, but it has shown to be a concern for people.
Yeah, it's not any more difficult than any other stadium. If we can increase the frequency on the trains and maybe get some more shuttle buses coming back and forward, which we're always striving to do to get more volume there, that would help. But in terms of the point made earlier by Nicky, in terms of football fans don't matter where they win the cup, I can understand as a fan, as a football fan myself, where you win the cup for a period of time doesn't matter. But I think when you look at the possibility of Hampden not being in existence, you're then looking at where do you play the cup final? Where do you play the semi-finals? You're then into a position whereby if you're looking at the point that was made in terms of the size of the crowds, you're looking at 50,000 plus for a cup final. So in the main, it's going to sell out. You're going to sell out the cup final. You've then got to look at neutrality. You've got to look at, as one team getting home advantage, as one home team getting regular home advantage, the away fans have to go to the opposition ground. Now, it happened during the Commonwealth Games period where cup finals were played elsewhere. And I think for a year, 2 years, if there's development work somewhere, that works. I think if it's for all time, I think it brings other challenges. Plus, you lose control as to when these games can be played.
Lots of tweets coming in. John Kyle says we should stay in Glasgow. Scotland had lots of great nights in the old park. But Lebo says, defo go. The place has no atmosphere. Murrayfield would be ideal.
Gordon, can I ask a question to Peter just quickly? Very briefly, Peter. It was just, see when you were talking about accessibility. So see, what if it was a Rangers Celtic Cup final? The policing and the security for going from Glasgow through to Edinburgh would be
Let's address the Murrayfield case a bit later on, because I want to try and cover all sides of the argument. Nicky was on the phone from Kirkintilloch a second ago. He's not for Hampden. Thanks to Nicky for his call. What does John in Linwood have to say to it? Hi, John.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Evening, John.
Peter, I must admit, mate, I agree with everything that you're saying tonight. I think it would be criminal. Actually criminal to even discuss about, you know, maybe just putting a building site on top of Hampden. The many teams, magnificent teams, the Lisbon Lions, Barcelona 72, and go on, go on, it's played there. Now, when I've heard there's no a good atmosphere at Hampden, but if your team's won something, surely to God there's an atmosphere there. What I'm saying is, guy, what the problem is for Hampden is there's got to be a revenue. Now, I know there, you can go to, like, rock stars. I know Elvis played there. No, that was Presley, wasn't it? Elvis Presley. No, what I'm saying is there's got to be a revenue for Hampden to make it good. We discussed on Clyde One about schoolboy football.
Yes, we did.
The whole week, right? And it was brilliant. But would it not be possible, Peter, that we could invite children to come to Hampden from schools, whatever councils? Could that not be a revenue? Because I think that's what's shouting for Hampden, is a bit of revenue, making money, because obviously Scotland isn't making a lot of money, and I'm sure I heard, being a Celtic supporter, a biscuit tin mentality tonight. But that's what Hampden's got to do, is think out the box, not the biscuit box, but make money. And I think council, the children coming to Hampden, seeing the great stadium that it is, and maybe making a revenue there, man.
Okay, thanks to John in Linwood. Time is against me. I'm going to have to move it on. We're going to get these to a full-time teaser. We've loads to get through, and soon we're going to speak to Scotland defender Andrew Robertson. You won't want to miss that.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com, backing Scottish football all season long. Please gamble responsibly.
Mark Guidi and Alex Ray here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. A very busy end to the show this is going to be. We're trying to cover all aspects of the Hampden debate if possible. Peter Dallas from Hampden Park Limited is with us. I'm still going to give you two a full-time teaser. We're going to just keep it ticking away in the background.
Yeah, Peter's already fitting. He's all set.
Is he all set? Is it? Let me dig out the old question. This one was sent in by Robert Lyons. A very similar theme to the one we had last night. I'm looking for the record outgoing transfers for each team in the Ladbrokes Premiership. So last night we had the incoming transfers. Now I'm looking for the record outgoing transfers for each team in the Ladbrokes Premiership. Just name the player. I'm not too fussed about the fee.
All right, just the player. Oh,
so for each team. So
Wanyama, 10 million?
Wanyama, no. Well, 12 and a half. Wanyama.
Well, see, I would argue Aidan McGeady was dearer, but it depends.
Depends which source you look at, but Victor Wanyama. I did a bit of research.
Thanks, God.
Most sources say Victor Wanyama.
We'll go Wanyama.
Alec, you do the Rangers one, obviously, to get us going. It's Alan Hutton. We can get back to that then.
You can join in anytime you want, Mark.
Scott Brown, Hibs.
Yes. Okay, we'll get back to them.
Great.
We'll get back to that in just a second, shall we? I want to look at all aspects of the Hampden debate. Obviously, Peter is here, and he is naturally going to give us his impression on why Hampden is the best venue. I think that does go without saying. But let's look at the other options, Mark and Alex in particular, because the second option, if you like, or one of them, is to make use of two other stadia that we have in Glasgow, Celtic Park and Ibrox. They filled in when Hampden was at the Commonwealth Games. They filled in the past. They are used to hosting big cup games and so on. What do you make of that as a solution?
Listen, I think in terms of the supply and demand, I think it would suit them in terms of the numbers. They'd be fine. I think the amenities at both clubs would be is similar to what Peter's just said in terms of Hampden. For me, going to cup finals, it then becomes an issue for me, Gordon. So if the both of them were playing against you, I toss you a coin, I would always have that the neutrality goes out the window because one of them would be playing at home. There's obviously that, but as I said, the more I'm thinking about the Hampden thing, is the more I feel as if we should actually stay at Hampden. The more information I'm getting about it, but I suppose I've got all the you'll have the doubters, and then in the west coast of Scotland as well, you have this kind of conspiracy theory about, you know, playing against somebody benefiting and the other team losing.
Mark, we mentioned neutrality a bit earlier on in the show. The Scottish FA, let's not forget, is a members' body. Now, ultimately, it's the board who will make this decision. They're going to meet on the 30th of January, so just a couple of weeks away. They will make a decision as soon as they possibly can. But the Scottish FA is a members' body. I'm asking you to second guess clubs here, but the clubs have been consulted. What do you think their opinion will be on essentially giving more money to Rangers and Celtic? Can you see that being an issue at all, or do you think they'll get behind that idea?
In terms of if we do away with Hampden, I think it could be an issue, and rightly so. Look, I think if we're just looking at it bare, what would be the right decision? The right decision is to stay at Hampden. For the good of our game, for so many reasons, you stay at Hampden. But like I said at the start, the numbers have got to stack up, and this is where Queen's Park have got to play ball, and Queen's Park have got to look at Scottish football as well, and not just about self-interest. So the SFA will have a number of options, and, you know, the SFA have got to do what's right, as I said, because financially they've got balance sheets, they've got bills, you know, they've not been inundated with money in terms of major qualification in the past 20 years. So there's so much to take into account, and I just hope that a solution can be reached between the SFA and Queen's Park. But, you know, a lot of the blame, it's SFA's fault, isn't that? You know, let's not forget Queen's Park have a major role to play in this, because ultimately it's their decision. The SFA will make an offer if they decide they want to stay. And Peter can correct me if I'm wrong. The SFA make an offer, and Queen's Park decide if they want to accept that offer or not. So I don't know if it's as simplistic as that, Peter, but Queen's Park are... they've got to be realistic when it comes to the numbers.
Now, when I was thinking about this, I thought obviously we're going to have Mark giving us the sort of media view of things, Peter giving us the view from the bosses at Hampden, if you like, trying to track down a player. I thought, who's got a good experience of Hampden? And the name Andy Robertson just jumped out at me. Played there obviously for Queen's Park and of course for Scotland as well. He joins us live on the phone at the moment. Andy, thank you very much for taking the time. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good, you?
Yeah, I'm just, I think I speak on behalf of football fans everywhere, I'm just pleased that you've stopped chasing down the Man City defence to take time out of your busy schedule and join us. Did you sleep well on Sunday night by any chance?
Yeah, I got to bed early, so it was all good.
Good man, we'll get back to that in a second, Andy. Like I say, you know Hampden as well as any player, really, having played there for Queen's Park and Scotland, so you've seen both sides of it. Just, what are your thoughts on this debate? What does the old place mean to you?
Well, obviously from a personal point of view, obviously, you know, it's a special place for me. It's where it kind of all began. You know, I've obviously worked in Hampden, I've played at Hampden for Queen's Park and Scotland, so, you know, for me, it's a no-brainer. I can see all the arguments, all the, you know, different sides of it, but, you know, for me, Hampden's a national stadium, and it should remain a national stadium, but, you know, obviously there's different things coming into it, and, you know, hopefully that will be the solution by the end of it.
What sort of memories do you take away from it, Andy? Because yours will be wide ranging. I mean, you're going to have had your debut for Queen's Park in front of next to no one, if you don't mind me saying, and then of course the high of, you know, Lee Griffiths' free kick going in against England and all that. So you've had a really wide range of experiences. What's it like to be involved there?
Of course, there's a lot. You know, the experiences I've had are a lot different. You know, played in front of 300 people, and I've played in front of a packed house, but, you know, I think the one that you mentioned is, you know, when Lee did put in the two free kicks, I don't think, you know, we've probably heard an atmosphere like it at a Scotland game in many years. You know, everyone spoke about it, and, you know, that was down to the Hampden crowd. Yeah, you can argue that, you know, some of the games that would be a bit quieter, then, you know, you maybe can't hear the fans enough. But I think when it's full and when it's packed, and Hampden's such a special place, and, you know, against England, I think that's what was the key to our success that day, because I think, you know, England players that play in front of all these crowds didn't quite know how to react. And, you know, I think they were a wee bit
wee bit shaken by it, and that's why we ended up, you know, unfortunately we didn't hang on to the result, but, you know, it managed to put us in a good position in that game.
Now, we've heard lots of opposition, Andy, talking about, you know, the view being poor, atmosphere, transport links, all these types of things. I appreciate they're not things that are really perhaps of a concern to you when you're on the field. The traditionalists will say, you know, it's the home of football, and you talk about the road to Hampden when it's a Scottish Cup final, and all the rest of it. Does that really matter to a player? Is it something that growing up you had aspirations to sort of run out with the national stadium? Would it be the same, do you think, if we didn't have one?
I think it does. You know, like you said, like when it's the Scottish Cup, it's always the road to Hampden. Once you get there, you know, that's when you know you've came far in the competition. You know, I was obviously Dundee United for the season, and you know, Hampden was taken over by the Commonwealth for that period. So we got to the Scottish Cup semi final, and we played at Ibrox, and we got to the final, and we played at Parkhead. And don't get me wrong, it was two special days for me and for all the squad. But you know, I think it would have been more special at Hampden when you're playing at the National Stadium. You know, you feel as if it's a semi-final, you feel as if it's a final. All these players get the chance to play at Parkhead every, like, you know, three times, twice a season, and same with Ibrox. So, you know, if that's the argument, then, you know, like I said, Hampden's just got a special feel to it. I think, you know, fans can feel it, players can feel it. They know it's an important game when they go there. And, you know, I think we might lose that if, you know, other options are considered.
And just while we've got Andy on the phone, Mark, you were actually down at the game.
Yeah, on Sunday.
At the weekend.
I was, Andy. I was privileged. My good friend Aji Chopra took me down, and just so happened to be in the director's box.
Ooh,
on Sunday. Can
nice.
I say,
just,
all right, for
it was. And can I just say, it was so proud as a Scotsman to sit there at that moment in the game when, and I don't know if you're aware, you're on the pitch, but just after you had that charge when you were trying to run, you know, break the all time record for running a mile, the 3 minute mile, but the cops started chanting your name, and then it started to reverberate around the whole ground. And after the game, and here's a name dropping coming, after the game, I spoke to Ked O'Leish and Gary McAllister but just to say it on Andy, they just couldn't stop talking about that moment, and the pair of them in the director's room after it, as Scotsmen, were so proud to see you doing so well on that day and play such a pivotal part and such a great victory for the club. So, you know, good on you. It was a privilege to be there, and just delighted to see you doing so well.
How was it, Andy, for you?
Yeah, thanks very much. You know, it was obviously a massive game for me. You know, the cops started singing my name when I was down that side. So, you know, they did give me like goosebumps, and, you know, you kind of step back and go, what just happened there? But, you know, it was a great moment. And, you know, it was, more importantly, it was a great result for us, beating a team that, you know, everyone was kind of backing to go invincible the whole season. And luckily we managed to get the 3 points, which was crucial for us. We see how tight it is at the top out with Man City, and, you know, we've got to keep pushing. So I'm just glad that I'm in the team and putting in good performances. But, you know, I know I've got a lot of work to do, and, you know, hopefully the fans can keep singing my name, because then obviously I'm doing something right.
What's going through your head when you make that charge? Is it a case of, right, I've committed to this, no turning back now?
Yeah, I spoke to him about it with one of the lads when I came off, and I was like, I didn't really want to go that far, but they kept on giving me a sniff of the ball, so I just kept on going and going. And then by that time, you know, the fans are roaring, I'm thinking, I need to go with the keeper now. So, but you know, that keeper, I was not surprised that he was being employed for anything. You know, he's that good with the ball at his feet. But, you know, I just had to keep going. But it did take me about, I think, 5-10 minutes to get my breath back.
It was great as well, because, as you know, the Liverpool fans were booing Raheem Sterling from the first minute for obvious reasons, and you frustrated him, Andy, so much so he got booked, and then Pep Guardiola substituted him. But that must have given you great pleasure to know that you'd managed to snuff out one of the on-form players in the EPL this season.
Of course, he's been, like, there's no hiding from it. You know, you've been brilliant this season. I think he's put his game to the next level, and we knew what, you know, what Serena could bring. But, you know, I think it was very similar to when, you know, we played Ireland at Parkhead, and the Scotland fans were booing Aidan McGeady the whole game. And, you know, it just gives you that wee bit, because it can affect them. And, you know, I can't speak on behalf of Sterling, but, you know, I think maybe the fans got in his head a wee bit, and luckily I managed to capitalise on it and, you know, keep him quiet, which was, you know, the pleasing thing.
I'm not sure if this is just I'm sure it is a coincidence. Liverpool 1 minute ago have just tweeted a video of Andy Robertson's lung bursting press. I don't know if someone's listening. Andy, listen, I know you're a busy man. Thanks very much for taking the time, and we'll hopefully see you in Scotland duty up here in the not too distant future. Take care.
Thanks, lads. See you later.
Good man. That was Andrew Robertson, having played for Queen's Park and Scotland at Hampden, of course. Let's speak to Mark in Wishaw. Hi, Mark.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No problem.
first time caller. I tell you what it is, the Hampden thing, I feel quite strongly about it. For me, it's a no-brainer. I just feel that Hampden Park is football's equivalent to any religion's consecrated ground. And I think the tradition that's there and everything that's happened on that ground in the past, I just feel that we need to do everything to keep it. And I just see Hampden Park as the centre of our football in Scotland. And I always enjoy my visits there, especially semi-finals, cup finals. I've always had a good feeling when I go to Hampden. The only bugbear I have regarding Hampden, and it's something that's always irritated me, is the fact if you have Rangers playing at home and Celtic playing at home on a Saturday, that's 110,000 spectators. And for me, the downside to Hampden is the capacity, and I'm quite surprised nobody's spoken about this already, but I just feel Hampden's a bit too small. I think it should have been way more than a 50,000 capacity, given the pulling power of the two Glasgow teams.
And Mark, you obviously like Hampden.
Yeah.
What about all the criticisms we keep hearing, though? Because a lot of fans feel very, as passionately as you do, in the opposite direction. They don't like the view, they don't like sometimes the atmosphere, they don't like the transport links or whatever it may be. How would you combat all that stuff if you feel so strongly about it?
Well, I go and watch Celtic. I've got a season ticket for Celtic, and I can assure everybody that Celtic Park isn't an easy stadium to get away from either. And I just feel that when you've got that volume of people descending on a venue at any given time, I think these wee problems are going to crop up, and I don't think there's a solution that's going to be perfect for getting anybody away from a stadium when you have that amount of people. But I just feel the tradition regarding Hampden, I mean, I've got books sitting in the house from various aspects of teams playing there, where one of the football quiz questions earlier on was Puskas and all the rest of it. You've had Eusebio there. Do you know, I mean, I would be absolutely gutted if we lost Hampden. I would be gutted.
Okay, thanks to Mark and Wisha. I am very keen to cover all sides of this debate. There are so many sides to it, that's the thing. So I want to hear right now from Scottish Rugby Union's Chief Operating Officer Dominic Mackay. As you would expect, we've got Peter Dallas in the studio pushing for Hampden. Dominic Mackay obviously thinks Murrayfield is the better option. He says it's got lots to offer that other stadiums in the country don't.
We're delighted to own and to operate Scotland's largest and probably most iconic stadium, BT Murrayfield, here in the heart of Edinburgh. And we're always looking at generating new events and new activities to host in Edinburgh and to host here at the stadium. We host, as you know, many rugby matches, whether that's the Six Nations or whether that's Autumn Tests. We also host major European rugby finals, and we're also delighted to host many great rock concerts and music concerts, with the largest ever stadium concert in Scotland's history with One Direction here a couple of years ago. So we're always in the market looking for major events, and we know that our friends across at the SFA are looking about their options. We have world-class facilities. We've got a world-class pitch, which is highly regarded by our friends in football. We've enjoyed Champions League football games here with Celtic, with European games with Hearts. And most recently, we've held a number of Hearts games here at the stadium, and the feedback from the supporters and the feedback from the staff at Hearts has been very positive. So we've got a great proud history of hosting outstanding football matches, and that's something we look to continue if we can. I think what we've got is an outstanding footprint here at the stadium. Not only have we got the largest stadium in terms of the number of attendees, we've got 67,000 of a capacity. We've also got outstanding media and broadcast facilities. But in addition to that, we've got a lot of space around the stadium to do some sponsor activity and for fan zones. So we think we've got something very special, perhaps that other stadiums in Scotland don't have the opportunity to offer. The process is that we've put our best foot forward in terms of sharing with our friends at the SFA our vision for football to come through to Edinburgh. They're considering all their options, and we will doubtless hear from them at some point during December. But it's been a fun process to be involved with, and we're very proud to have been involved with the process and hope to continue to be part of it.
That was the case for Murrayfield. We'll take a closer look at that side of the argument after these.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Download the app and score a tap-in. Please gamble responsibly.
Mark Guidi and Alex Ray here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We're also joined by Peter Dallas from Hampden Park Limited as we try and discuss all aspects of this Hampden debate. Remember, 30th of January is the date. That's less than 2 weeks away. That's the date when the Scottish FA Board will come together, discuss their findings, look at the costs of leaving Hampden, the costs of staying at Hampden, the feedback they've had from the member clubs, from supporters, and all the rest of it, and hopefully move towards a decision quite quickly. Mark, before the break, we heard from the SRU's Chief Operating Officer Dominic Mackay outlining the case for Murrayfield, yeah, talking about the footprint of the stadium, some of the spaces that they have around, the broadcast facilities and all the rest of it. I think most people who have been to Murrayfield would agree that it is also an impressive arena.
Listen, it's a fabulous stadium, there's no doubt about that. You know, as you said, there's 67,000 there, you know, but he was focusing mainly on concerts, and you know, I've been to concerts there and it is good, but you know, I think we've got to remember it. We are talking about football here. He put forward an argument as well about, you know, kind of fan zone areas. Hampden's got that as well. They've also got Lesser Hampden, the doorstep that you can turn into. So, you know, there is stuff at Hampden that you can utilise. So, look, Murrayfield has a lot to offer. We can't deny that. But for me, there's also tradition at stake and different things. And that's why I would stay at Hampden.
I know this is a very simplistic way of looking at it, but would the notion of football or football game giving money to rugby, is that a concern for you, or is that something that we would just have to get over if it was the best deal?
We would just have to go over it with whatever the SFA decide to do. But I think, like you mentioned before, about would other clubs want to be given more money to Celtic and Rangers for hosting finals and semis, I think that would come into the equation as well. As best we can, with all respect to Murrayfield and rugby, you do want to keep football money in football.
Now Peter Dallas joins us from Hampden Park Limited. Peter, the other thing about Hampden at the moment is it's not going anywhere soon, in the sense that Euro 2020, we're going to be hosting a couple of the group stage matches there. I actually understand you had, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think UEFA were in yesterday or today.
Absolutely correct.
What did they find?
Absolutely correct, Gordon. Hampden's in a very fortunate position that it will host four Euro 2020 matches. We are one of 12 stadia throughout Europe that will host part of the competition. We're going through a very, very stringent process. So it's not just me that's suggesting the facilities at Hampden are excellent. UEFA and high-ranking officials at UEFA are on a journey with us to make sure that we are Category 4 compliant, which is the highest category for a UEFA stadium. We are coming through a very rigorous process to make sure we're very much compliant for 2020, so much so that Alexander Shefferin, who is the UEFA president, was in at Hampden back in October and actually said that Hampden is one of the best mid-sized stadiums in Europe, and it will be a perfect setting for four matches in Euro 2020. So listening to comments regards other stadia, the playing surface, yep, we've got to have the playing surface absolutely spot on at all times for major events. And when you look at the other elements that we have in terms of how we can adapt the stadium, the flexibility we have for accommodation, all the facilities we have, the travel arrangements, catering facilities, accessible facilities. We've just improved the scoreboards as well at the stadium, invested in them, so we've got the best.
Was this with Euro 2020 in mind?
This is very much with Euro 2020 in mind. The playing surface, looking at playing football again in the autumn period, if there was rugby on a pitch, you can play rugby on a football pitch. When you go the other way, it's not quite so straightforward, particularly when there's a very congested calendar. There's a new Nations League competition that's going to start in September, October, November. That's when autumn test matches take place. So in terms of UEFA, we are getting excellent reports, so much so that earlier on last year we were ranked third out of the 12 stadia in Europe, and that's something we should be proud of and celebrate and keep working on. So yeah, we've got a bright future. And again, talking about concerts, it's a very, very important part of the business. It's important that Glasgow has a stadium that can host events of that size, given the economic impact. European Championships will bring in a minimum of £60 million into the city. Concerts this year, we've got three Ed Sheeran concerts coming in. That will bring in a minimum of £8 million to
the bars, cafes, pubs, clubs, transport, hotels. So there's a lot more just than playing football. We've also got to consider all the office accommodation, Scottish FA offices, SPFL offices, all the affiliated association offices. We've got a museum that charts the very history of the game at Hampden. We've got the medicine clinic that's in at Hampden. We've got a print room which we can move. So as well as where we're going to play football, it's where is all of this infrastructure and all of these bodies, where are they going to operate from?
Okay, let's give the last word to Derek and Darnley. Let's take another call. Derek, what are your thoughts on this debate then?
Well, I think Hampden is the home of Scottish football. I've had been to many games there, and they've been fantastic games. I've been to some who are not fantastic because basically you don't win, so they're not so good.
It tends to work that way.
Yeah, but my concern about Hampden is a little bit different from some of your other callers. They're talking about the pitch, they're talking about the view from the stadium. Mine's is a little bit different. Quite recently in the group stages for Scotland, we played Malta, and I had four young boys, 14-year-olds, wanted to go to the game, went to Hampden to buy a ticket and couldn't buy a ticket. So I had to buy tickets, so I had to go to the game to take four teenage boys to the game. Due to family circumstances, I also had to take my 5-year-old. Now, this is the problem that I have with Hampden. It does not cater for families at all. So all around us, when we are watching, well, we tried to watch the game, my 5-year-old seen none of it. I had families in front of me, two men with six boys, and there was other families around. So there was about nine kids, all between the ages of 5 and 9. Not one of them seen the game, and to a point where they were actually having to stand on the seats to try and see some of the game, with their parents holding them. That's the only way they could get to see some of the game. My son is a season ticket holder at Ibrox. His view of the game was so restricted that after the game he said to me, "I don't want to ever come back here again. I prefer Ibrox."
Hey, let me open that up to Mark Guidi. Mark, it sort of crosses over because ticketing issues are really to do with the, you know, the organisation that runs the competition, or perhaps the clubs, depending on how the tickets are sold. But what do you make of Derek's more general point? Is that something that we can avoid it?
Well, listen, you know, if there's paying supporters, particularly families, you know, teenagers, we want to be the next generation and make sure that they stay involved in football, supporting it and turning up to see live games. It's whatever team you support, and then for the national team as well. Then if they've not had a good experience, then that's something that I'm sure that the SFA and Hampden would want to look at and listen to and try and correct for the next time. So listen, there's always going to be things to learn, there's always going to be things that you can improve on, and the important thing is that the people who are in charge of the stadium, whatever, listen to the concerns of families and try to do their best to make sure the next time, A, that they get them back, and B, they have a better fan experience the next time. And I'm sure Peter would look at that.
Okay, thanks to Derek and Darnley. I was hoping to hear from the local MSP for Hampden, James Dornan. We are out of time. I can only apologise. We'll try and get that fired up online or something tomorrow. Hopefully you can hear it in the news bulletins and try and bring you up to speed with what happened there. Let's get some answers on the teaser then. We're looking for the record transfers for every club in the Ladbrokes Premiership. Go for it. Just fire them at me.
Callum Davidson.
For who?
St Johnson.
Yes.
Craig Gordon Hearts.
Yes.
Phil O'Donnell Motherwell.
You two are flying.
Rob Douglas Dundee.
Yes.
McCarthy at Hamilton.
Uh huh.
Naismith at Kilmarnock.
Yep.
Who we got left? What team are we looking for? Liam Lindsay at Partick Thistle.
There's a steward's inquiry over Partick Thistle because
definitely
Mark,
Liam Lindsay.
You're sure it's Liam Lindsay?
Yes.
It's
no more Johnson.
The reliable,
for sure.
The reliable source that is Wikipedia, no, says Jack Hendry.
No, we'll go
one or the other. How does that sound?
Stephen Wright, Aberdeen.
No. So that's the only
Robertson.
One you're waiting on. The only one you're waiting on is Aberdeen. No.
Roberts. So what have I got in Aberdeen? Oh, wait a minute.
Johnny Hayes. It's not Johnny Hayes, and it's not David.
Who went
Robertson
to Coventry?
Ian Jess.
Oh.
I'm amazed you didn't get that earlier. You got
good,
some of the hard
good
ones.
That was a good one.
Ian Jess. Thanks to Robert Lyons for sending that one in. Special thank you to Peter Dallas from Hampden Park Limited. We could have gone all night with this Hampden debate, but we are out of time. Thanks to Mark Guidi and Alex Ray for joining me, Gordon Duncan. We'll be back Thursday night at 6 o'clock in the company of Gordon DL and Mark Wilson.
1 Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Bet and play and pull a result out of the bag. Please gamble responsibly.